Hello, and welcome to Final Girls Horrorcast, the show where we discuss some of the horror, thriller, and sci-fi movies currently available on your favorite streaming sites. I'm Amy.
And I'm Carly.
Today we're discussing two recent releases, Hush, directed by Mike Flanagan and written by Mike Flanagan and Kate Siegel, and also The Invitation, directed by Karen Kazama and written by Phil Hay and Matt Manfredi. Carly and I both highly recommend these films and don't want to spoil them for you, so if you have not watched these yet, please stop the podcast, go watch them, and come back and listen to the rest of it, because we are going to be spoiler heavy and you don't want to miss these.
Yeah, especially if you haven't seen The Invitation, please watch that first if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Listen no further.
You should watch them anyway. You're going to love it.
I agree.
Yeah. But before we get started with that, let's jump into a segment we like to call
Trailer Trash Talk.
Today we're just going to do one trailer because there's not too much that we haven't done yet that's coming up soon. So yeah. I'm waiting for some more trailers to come out. So today's Trailer Trash Talk segment, we're going to just do one movie, and it's Siren, which is due for theatrical release December 2nd. And it's directed by Greg Bishop. And this is like pretty much the same thing as the VHS segment, Amateur Night. And it's just into a full length movie or taking that story a step further.
Yeah, the creepy chick is in it.
Yeah, it is. She's still like the same. I don't know. Is it maybe it's like even a prequel or something? It creeps me out. It's like the creepiest.
Weird tale.
Yeah, it's my creepiest VHS segment. I think it's going to be great. I think it looks awesome.
It does. The trailer, for some reason, like, really felt, I know it's a different premise, but it really felt very reminiscent of Hostel for me for some reason. I don't know if it was because of, like, maybe it wasn't even, like, the first Hostel, but I feel like there was one involving, like, a bachelor party or something like that.
Oh.
I could be thinking of a totally different movie. But it was reminiscent of that for me.
Like, he's walking down the corridor and it's like all like prison like that kind of feels very hostile.
Mm-hmm.
In the cells, you know, like that part of wherever they were definitely looked like hostile.
But yeah, but it looks really interesting and definitely very reminiscent of that VHS short for sure.
Yeah, she had the scary face at the end with the teeth. I can't handle that. I love it so much. I like love it and hate it so much at the same time. So scary. And then they do the I like you whisper. I can't do that. I don't like that either.
You love it.
I do. I love it and I hate it so much at the same time. So it was written by David Bruckner, who is the one that originally wrote Amateur Night from the VHS series. So, you know, it can't be bad, right? Same writer? I don't know.
Just longer?
Yeah, and I'm sure he worked with Greg Bishop, probably, because Greg Bishop worked on VHS Viral. He also did a long, long list of random horror movies I'd never even heard of, so I can't speak to his directing talent whatsoever, but I'm down to see it. I love the idea. It's definitely a type of monster that creeps me out a lot.
Yeah, for sure. They think that she's just like a girl that's trapped, and then she's a weird monster with a weird rat tail.
And she can fly. Well, at least she could in the VHS one. I assume she could fly in this one also.
She was definitely like running up walls.
Yeah.
In the trailer.
Yeah, what is she? Like, because we've never actually seen her in her full form, right? But she has like wings and some kind of reptilian tail.
Yeah.
No idea, though. Brilliant. It's like part bat, lizard, woman.
Yeah, all of the above.
With crazy teeth that none
the
of those things
so
have.
So weird.
So weird. I love it. Ah. What is it with teeth? Isn't there like show coming out where someone's completely covered in teeth?
Is there?
Oh, my God. It's totally unrelated. I don't know the details of it, so it's stupid to even bring it up. But I saw something recently about an upcoming movie or TV show or something where a person's completely made out of teeth, like their skin is teeth.
Ew.
It was really gnarly. I saw a picture of it and I couldn't handle it.
You can't get that out of your brain.
No, it's awful and awesome at the same time. Okay, yes. Movies. That concludes our trailer trash talk segment.
Yeah, the end.
I mean, I assume you would see this. I'm going to see it.
I would see it. David Bruckner wrote The Signal, which I really, really liked. So I would check this movie out.
The Signal. I don't think I saw that one.
It's good. I liked it a lot.
All right. Let's do Hush first. Let's talk about Hush. Hush is directed by Mike Flanagan and written by also Mike Flanagan and his wife, Kate Siegel. And Kate Siegel, who is the main character in this movie.
Does a great job.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I love the husband-wife team. There's a husband-wife team in The Invitation, too, which is kind of exciting to see that. But, yeah. Mike Flanagan.
Mike Flanagan did Oculus.
Oculus, Before I Wake, and Ouija, Origin of Evil, which I know you just saw recently.
Have you seen it yet?
I haven't. I do want to see it, but I feel like I'm going to wait to see it. Yeah. Because I have no reason not to think Mike Flanagan's going to come up with a good movie, but it's still, like, the first one was so bad.
Sure, but he wasn't in charge of that one, right?
No, nothing whatsoever. And I watched an interview with him where he was like, just pretend that it's not a sequel to anything. Just go see it. I promise it's not as bad as you think it is.
That's amazing. Thank you, Mike Flanagan, for touching on that.
Yeah, I love Oculus. A lot of people aren't fond of it, but I love that movie.
I love Oculus.
It's a lot of fun, and I thought it was going to be horrible, and it wasn't. I have no reason not to trust Mike Flanagan. I haven't seen Before I Wake yet.
Me either.
But, well, I'll see it eventually. I don't know why I'm not more excited about his other movies if I liked his first one, but for some reason, it's like, every time he does a movie, I'm like, meh. I did the same thing with Hush. I did the same thing with Hush, where I was like, that doesn't even look good. And then I loved
it. What, it was like literally on, it kept on getting recommended to me on Netflix and I kept on going, nah, next.
Poor Mike Flanagan. He like puts out these great movies and every time he puts something out, we go, meh. There's absolutely no reason for it.
I know, we're brats.
Maybe it's like the trailers, just the trailers just look so cheesy usually. I remember the Oculus trailer looking super cheesy to me.
For this one, it was like the cover, or at least what the cover looks like on Netflix. The mask just seemed kind of cheesy to me, and I don't know.
It looked like it could have been like an MTV show or something.
Literally, I think that's what it reminded me of, the Scream the Series mask.
It totally
and
does.
So I was like, I'm not really, I don't need it right now.
Yeah. But, I mean, luckily we watched it, and we know that it's awesome. And now we can urge all of you to watch it.
Very true, because it's great. Movie.
Yeah. So, Mike Flanagan doesn't like to call this a horror movie, which I don't like it when people do that. How is that? Well, they say it's more of a thriller than a horror movie, because there's, like, a line they didn't cross in terms of gore and things of that nature.
Did you see what they did to her hand? Because I sure did. A lot of horror movies that don't even go that far. So I beg to differ.
I know. You know what? I have such a hard time with this whole, like, horror. This is not a horror movie. This is a thriller. This isn't a thriller movie. This is a, I don't, it's all horror to me. Like, if I feel horror when I watch it, then it's a horror movie.
If this will scare me into not wanting it to be in a cabin by, like, in the woods by myself, it's a horror movie.
Exactly. Exactly.
Ugh. Bottom line.
I love this one. Okay, so let's talk about it a little bit. So the basic premise of this movie is the main character, Maddie, who is also the writer of this film, Kate Siegel. She's deaf and she's mute due to having bacterial meningitis as a child. And she's a famous writer. She wrote a novel and is working on her second. She's like secluded in this cabin. And an intruder comes in and, or doesn't come in, attacks her basically. And
attacks her neighbor.
Yeah.
And then finds her because her neighbor Penny, or not, she's not Penny, her neighbor Sarah, sorry, she's Penny on Grey's Anatomy. So anyway, Sarah runs over to her house for help, but obviously since she is deaf and mute, cannot hear her banging on the glass. And yeah. So our killer man sees her and says, ooh, this will be fun.
This will be fun.
And really so plays with her.
Yeah, it's definitely.
For like the first 30 minutes of the movie.
It's like watching a cat bat a mouse around for a while. Yeah. It's a little hard to watch. So it's a very familiar premise with like a crazy twist, you know. And I think that it's so refreshing. You can tell that a woman had a hand in writing this movie because it's so refreshing to see a really intelligent woman who's at a severe disadvantage just trying to use her disadvantage to work with her instead of against her.
Mm-hmm, and absolutely. It's,
I just love it. I love the idea behind it. I love that there's no like weird rapey torture stuff. And you can just kind of enjoy the idea of something like this happening to you and like it's a puzzle, like how do I get out of this?
Yeah.
And just dealing on that terror alone instead of all those other layers that people like to add on to these types of movies that I think can be too much sometimes and unnecessary.
I agree. I think that's
simplicity
why
simplicity works so great.
Yeah, that's why this movie is so successful.
Yeah.
It's weird to say, but almost like the relationship between Maddie and this guy and like how things kind of unfold. And like at the beginning, yeah, like he's in the house, he's behind her, he has a million chances right. to just kill her, but yeah. You know that he just like really like part of it for him is just getting off on playing with his victims. Kudos to John Gallagher Jr. who plays the man, because
oh my god, yeah,
I saw he was the kid in 10 Cloverfield Lane. And like,
was he? That's why yeah. He looked familiar.
Yeah. And I would have like never, ever put him in. I had to look him up because I was like, he looks so familiar. And then when I saw that, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, way to go that guy for using his acting to totally become these characters.
Totally. And I just love, I don't know. I love the whole premise. It's just creative and interesting and fantastic and quick moving and I don't know. It's I would
bored.
Never are you bored. So, yeah. Okay. So, the first big scare when Maddie is FaceTiming with her sister, and he is just behind her, like going yeah. through her stuff, and the sister's like, "Oh, is there something behind you? Is there something there?"
She's like, it's the cat. And he really, I mean, he learns so much about her.
He does.
To the point where, you know, she says, my boyfriend's coming home soon. And he's like, he repeats like verbatim the conversation mm-hmm. that she had with her sister. Like,
yeah.
So this guy is a pro. He's yeah. done this before and he's not messing around.
No, not at all. He's so
the
creepy.
Character setup is brilliant.
It is. Now, how do you feel about him revealing his face?
I just think it's kind of a testament to how cocky he is. He is sure that this is going to end in his way, that almost not seeing his face gave her a sense of ease to say, like, I haven't seen your face. I don't know who you are. Please just go away. We can forget this ever happened. But he's saying, this is me. I'm not going away.
Yeah.
This is going to end with you dead or me dead. And that's kind of like how this is going to go.
Yeah, I love that part. And I've heard quite a few complaints from people saying they wish he didn't reveal his face. But the reason why it's good that he did is because he's not Jason. He's not Michael Myers. He's just a dude. And he's cocky and he's flawless. But he also has a giant upper hand in this situation.
I love that he did. I feel like it made it a lot more personal.
It made it scarier as a woman anyway, watching it. I'd be like, oh, I'm fucked. This guy wants me dead. Like, there's nothing else he wants. He wants me dead.
Especially when he's like, you've seen my face now.
Yeah.
I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah. I just wonder if this film is as effective for men as it is for women. Because
that's a good question.
A lot of the feedback I've heard from men who've seen this is that they wish he didn't show his face and it's a little bit boring. And I feel the exact opposite way. So I don't know if it's because guys maybe put themselves in her shoes instead of like realizing she can't just charge at him like a linebacker.
Yeah, which I mean, they kind of
did. Did I get that right? I don't know anything about football. Do linebackers hurl themselves at people?
I have no idea.
I just made that up.
I don't watch football.
It sounds right.
Sure.
Left tackle, that's a thing.
But I mean, like, they address that with bringing John, who is the neighbor, Sarah's boyfriend, into the picture, who is like a foot taller than the man, and he's a big guy.
Yeah.
And he still outwits him. And stabs him in the throat. So,
and I love John. That guy was great. I love that character and how he was very there very briefly, but I really liked him and the way he was very smart. But I don't know. You could see every step he went through in his brain.
Yeah,
to get to the decision.
Figuring it out.
Yeah, and I liked the way it was done. When so I watched an interview with Kate and Mike, the writer director team, and they said that when, because they live together because they're married, when they were writing this movie, they would like kick Mike outside and then Kate would try to like keep him from getting in the house, so he had to try to break in the house with her there, and it was like a game they would play while they were writing this, so that I don't know, they could kind of get in her head and he could get in his head and they could just write these characters out. I think they did a really good job, and I think that was probably a really great and effective way to write this movie, because the pace has to be fast. When there's no dialogue and it's in one spot, like, you run out of options really quickly, so.
Totally.
I loved how, I don't know how they kept it so fresh. It's like a severe testament. I'm not saying
to their skills.
Yeah.
I mean, I was never bored throughout the entire time watching it. And even, I mean, I've seen this movie a couple times for sure. Because I like that it's quiet. So, you can really just kind of pay attention to all the nuances and all the little things that are happening. It's great. And it keeps your attention. At least it kept my attention throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. There's very little sound. And
unless the alarm is going off.
Unless the alarm's going off, for sure. But, you know, she has some internal stuff happening, and there's that really interesting scene where you can basically be in her head while she's writing and rewriting the ending of her own story right then and there. Because you see her doing that when she's writing. There's a scene in the beginning where she's writing and she's playing out all the different endings. So she does basically the same thing in her stressful existence where she just keeps, okay, let me play out this scenario, and realizes she just has to face him head on. And I love that scene. Like, that's a really creative way to deal with that, because it's hard, it's not really that hard to tell what she's thinking when she's not talking, but you almost forget that she can't communicate with him, you know.
Yeah, I really like that they address that too. They ask, you know, when you hear yourself talking in your head, is it a little girl because you lost your voice when you were a child? And then so seeing that towards the end, and that was really cool. I really liked that part too.
Yeah, I love that. It's a really creative way to kind of show why she's doing what she's doing. Because, you know, how often do you talk about horror movies and you're like, oh, why is she running up the stairs? She should be going out the window or whatever. Like, this is like, okay, this is legit what she's thinking. She's an intelligent person and this is why she's making this decision. It's completely combating that stereotype in horror movies. So I love that. What did you think was the scariest part of this film?
Scariest part. I think there's a couple parts. I think probably the beginning when, you know, he's watching her and she just has no idea. Because I always feel like, not so much right now because I don't have like huge windows in my house, but I definitely remember, like growing up when I'd be like in our kitchen and we had like huge windows and always like wondering, like, that's such an interesting, you know, like if somebody could be watching me right now and I have no idea. And so that part's really creepy because you really don't know, you know, when you're, you know, somebody could just be chilling and being a creeper. But then also the end where she's injured and she has to talk to herself like, okay, well, if you stay and do nothing, he gets in or he doesn't and you end up bleeding out and dying anyway. So like, you know, like coming to that realization where like you have to fight.
Literally she has to, like she has no other option. And that's very scary. Like,
it's terrifying.
Cause it's one thing.
To the point where, like, she realizes it and she writes down, you know, 5'9" or whatever, green eyes, tattoo on neck, I love you, mom and dad and my sister, like, I died fighting. Like, making the realization that, like, death could happen. You might not make it out. But you have to do what you have to do is, like, so scary.
That is very terrifying. I thought it was, like, my like, freak out moment is in the beginning when she's getting all those pictures from her own phone and and they're of her. I would fucking flip out.
Absolutely. That is, I agree 100%. That's terrifying.
So terrifying. Oh my god. Oh, scares me. So I like that he had arrows, like a crossbow. That was his form of attack, because it's not, I mean,
because again, it's a game.
Yeah, like he had a knife too, but it felt more hunter-esque, because you could have any asshole can have a gun here in America. So
he does this for fun.
Yeah, but you know, if you have a crossbow, you're a legit hunter. That's something you enjoy doing. He has like fucking tallies on his crossbow. It's messed up.
So cool.
And he keeps all the jewelry from everybody's, from all of his trophies for all the people he killed.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. I mean, you can really tell that everything in this movie was thought out so well. Yeah. And there's a reason for everything. And even people that say they didn't like that he took his mask off, there's a reason for it.
Right.
There's a motive behind every single little thing in this movie. And it's so good.
Yeah. And Mike and Kate said in the interview I watched that they knew they had to keep him outside for as much as possible in the film, because once he gets inside, the movie's basically over.
Yeah.
So I think they did a good job of leveling that out, where you know, every once in a while you're like, why doesn't he just break in at this point? You know, like once you started asking, okay, why doesn't he just break in now? You know, they kind of answer it. Like he'd be like, yeah, I'll wait, let her bleed out a little bit more. It'll be easier. But at the same time, you're like, but doesn't he want it to be difficult?
But then she says, like, coward, come and get me.
Yeah.
What are you doing? And that's when he's like, okay. And I want to know what kind of glass her house has, because I feel like if I tried to break one of my windows, it would just break.
Yeah.
But, like, it took time and it didn't even, like, that glass never even shattered. But then he, like, creeps in her house behind her bathtub, or like into her bathtub when she's in the bathroom. So like he's pretty much, like, the time that she spent trying to figure out what to do, he hasn't just been like hanging out in the backyard. He's been doing his homework as well, and like figuring out how to get into the house for the moment when he's going to take her out.
I know, I like that scene too. I did have to rewind and watch that scene again, because I was like, Is there a window up there? Like, I rewound past when she walks in the room again, because it's like, I don't remember seeing a window. It's a really small window and it's really high up, so it would have been difficult for him to get in there. I'm not exactly sure how he accomplished that, but
he's a ninja.
He might be part ninja. I don't know. I guess if he had a chair, could do it. It's also weird that he knew exactly where she was, but I'll let it slide. It's really, like, the only thing I could think of. I knew I had a question for you written out of somewhere. Oh, what did you think about his mask, the way it looked? Just, I know you said it looked like the Scream mask to you, but...
Yeah, once I watched the movie, I was fine with it, because it's, like, it's almost kind of just like, oh, what you would find if you went to your, you know, I don't know, like, a store and just bought a generic whatever mask.
That's true. It
was trying to be something else.
Apparently it was created from one of the creatures in Mike Flanagan's 2016 release, Before I Wake, and they just added, like, nose and eyes to the mask. But that's
did
what
you
they
know,
molded it out of.
This is kind of off topic, but it's a mask question.
Okay.
I never knew that the Halloween mask was, like, William Shatner mask.
You didn't know that?
That they that's just, like painted.
Yeah, no. That's Halloween trivia 101, girl.
I, like, had no idea until there was this, like, Halloween mask art show here. And, like, they had the William Shatner mask and then the Halloween mask kind of, like, side by side.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that is so cool that, like, when you don't have a budget, you just kind of go for it.
It works.
It's so good. So I like the idea that they repurposed.
Yeah, totally.
This other mask.
Yeah.
For this.
Little Easter egg for you. I've never seen Before I Wake.
I haven't either, so I have no idea.
I know. So I don't know what those creatures look like. But...
It kind of reminded me of, like, because it's just kind of like a plain white mask.
Yeah.
Like one of, like, the Jabberwocky masks. Like
it does
dancers,
kind of.
You know?
but with saggy eyes.
Yeah, but it has more definition.
Circles. Yeah.
So
it does kind of look like a Jabberwocky mask.
Right, which are creepy.
Yeah,
they're creepy looking.
Sure.
So.
Are they? I always feel like they look so nice.
I mean, they look nice with what they're doing, but if I saw that thing outside my house,
oh, that's true.
I'd be freaked out.
No, 100%. I don't want to see any. I don't care what you look like. You cannot wear a mask and stand outside my house. It's not allowed unless it's Halloween. No, thank you. That fight at the end was crazy, and I loved how hard she fought him. She just kept going. She never gave up. She sprayed that wasp spray in his face and got the alarm going. And
yeah, I support using household items
for sure
for defense mechanisms. And I don't know why, but this it just reminded me. It just reminded me of, have you ever seen the movie Three Ninjas when you were little?
Yeah.
Like how, like, the robbers are breaking into their house and they use, like, soap to make them, like, slip on the ground. I don't know. Just, like, that scene just popped into my head.
Well, that's interesting that you thought of that one and not Home Alone, which is, like, the ultimate movie with kids doing shit to people trying to get in their houses.
I agree. And that also came into my head.
Yeah.
But Three Ninjas.
Specifically Three Ninjas, not Home Alone.
Correct.
That's so funny. I don't think anyone else would go there first.
You're welcome, Final Girls Podcast.
You're special.
Welcome to the show.
You're a special, delicate flower of love.
Love Three Ninjas.
Oh my god. Okay, should we move on? Do we have more to talk about? Oh, I wanted to say about how he crushed the crap out of her hand, and then her fingers were all, like, mangled. I'm doing a demonstration, people, on the podcast, but you can't see it. Where her fingers were like this.
Amazing.
And then she couldn't, but that's like giving away her way means to communicate. So now she can't even, like, communicate if she wanted to.
That's true. And again, playing with her, because he could have just opened the door right then and there.
Yeah.
But he lets her take her, he destroys her hand and then lets her take it back.
He's a little bit sadistic.
And lock the door.
He's a little bit sadistic, but I think we can both agree he's also kind of handsome.
Yes, I agree.
I'm like, I know you're trying to kill her, and you're basically a terrible person, but he also, like, has, like, a light personality. Like, it's weird. He's very, like, honest.
He's very forthcoming with how this is going to go. He doesn't ever give her any kind of hope, like, I'm just going to go away.
It's weird. I feel very strangely about him because I know I'm supposed to hate him, but I also kind of love him because he's got some charisma, and he's like, he does a little bit. Like, he jokes around.
I love him, but I'm definitely intrigued by him.
I don't know if I love him either because he's obviously a serial killer, so he has issues. But I'm just saying, you know, he's a little bit charismatic and he's funny. And he's honest. And those are some lovely qualities in a man.
So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Amy's take on the man.
I think that...
on the handsome man.
I'm just saying, but I know he's got issues.
He's not Chris Hemsworth handsome man.
I'm not sure that I would set him up with any of my friends. Out of fear that he might kill them.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, he's not the worst guy in the world.
There are worse out there.
I'm going to stop talking now.
I love it. So with that, wraps up our chat on Hush. Let's go ahead and move into the invitation.
Oh, you guys, it's been a rough week. I'm having a really hard time. I'm just letting loose a little bit. Oh, my God. Fuck this week. Okay, is this 2016 over yet? Fuck.
Close.
Oh my god.
Close.
All right. Let's talk about The Invitation.
Yay.
Yay.
I love this movie so hard.
You love it so hard?
I do.
It's a pretty good one.
It's so good.
Yes. It's directed by Karen Kusama. So we have a female director here, and it's written by Phil Hay and Matt Manfredi, and I believe Karen Kusama is married to Phil Hay. So another directing writing team, marriage team. I can't talk today, you guys. Karen Kusama directed Jennifer's Body, which is probably one of her only known films.
I've actually never seen it.
I haven't either. We wanted to do it on this episode, but then we realized it wasn't streaming, so we went with another movie we wanted to do. And they do have a lot of similarities, so I think that they go well together.
Yeah, me too.
They both are just in one location, so I love that about it. You know, containment thrillers. That's what they call them. They're really horror movies in my head, but whatever. But Karen's also going to be doing a female-driven horror anthology coming out in February with a couple other female horror directors. So that's something really exciting to look forward to. I don't think...
Yeah, that's super cool.
A lot of female characters and all-female directors doing this anthology. So that's exciting and awesome, and I'm super excited about it. Did I say it's called XX?
Not yet.
It's called XX.
To be on the lookout.
The horror anthology is. I am looking forward to a trailer for that. Okay, so anyway, getting into The Invitation. This movie is basically about a man who is going to a dinner party thrown by his ex-wife and her new boyfriend, husband, lover. And it's really uncomfortable and weird. That's basically the plot, right?
Yeah, okay. And the beginning of the movie really kind of sets the scene for how the rest of the movie is going to be. This movie is not like Hush, where it's kind of like nonstop action. It's definitely slower, but like it keeps you guessing pretty much through the whole thing. At least like when you think you've got it figured out, it's like, or not, or maybe that's not what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite thing about this, because I was watching it, and obviously going into it, you kind of have kind of a pre-thought of what it's going to be like. But then, and especially with the main character, who is totally not mentally stable, they had a son together who died, the main guy and his ex-wife. And like he has like all these weird flashbacks, and he doesn't really trust anything that's going on. And that's kind of how you feel the whole movie, I feel like.
For sure. Totally. And it's just a really interesting way to go about doing a movie like this. I love the idea behind it. And I think I think this would be really hard to direct and to make it as good as it is. So.
I agree.
I really think Karen Kusama did a really good job on this one, and it's really worth a watch. Okay, so basically, they hit the coyote. They have to mercy kill him. So this, like, this mercy killing is already in your head, and then it just kind of spirals out of control from there. And you're kind of like, okay, well, did him mercy killing that coyote make him, like, concoct this crazy thing that's happening, or is it actually happening? Because he's just out of control and having trouble with his grief.
He's definitely having a little bit of a breakdown throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting how they did the flashbacks, because you could kind of see that this isn't how he used to be, you mm-hmm. know? And the flashbacks are very brief, and they flow in and out, so it kind of feels like it's more like him going back and forth between his prior life and his current life, instead of like an actual flashback. You know what I mean? Like, he just keeps going yeah. back and forth. It seems almost like a mental instability for him than an actual, like, film-making tool, you know? Yeah. So,
especially him seeing how happy appearing his ex-wife is.
Yeah. She's creepy.
Yeah. Yes. And I love, oh God, I think his name, the guy that plays David, Michael Hussman, who has been like cleaning it up in acting parts lately. I remember I first saw him, he was on Nashville, but he's in like Game of Thrones now. He's Dario. He's been doing like so many things. He was in that movie, The Age of Adeline. He was on Orphan Black. He's been killing it on the part.
He's keeping busy.
Yeah. So it was, I like him a lot as an actor. So it was really fun seeing him in this movie where he plays the ex-wife's boyfriend.
Yeah.
And she is just insane, it looks like. And they're, you know, and then there's like the two weird people. What's the chick's name? Sadie?
Sadie and Pruitt.
Pruitt, yeah. Who?
Pruitt is fucking creepy. They're both so, so creepy. And Will is just standing there, and he looks over, and she's just Donald ducking it. She's got, like, the shirt and no pants look. That's what Tony and I call Donald ducking it.
I like it.
So she's just got, like, this little short shirt on and no underwear or anything, and could you imagine being at a party and that just happens? I don't know. That's, like, insane and uncomfortable.
Honestly, I would have left before
any of it.
Yeah.
If I were him, I don't even think I would have gone. Like, how uncomfortable is that? Hey, you want to go to this house where your son and you used to be happy and your wife's living there with her new boyfriend and... like, that sounds horrible. No, I don't want to do that. No, thank you.
Yeah, and I don't know. I feel like, especially after the cult video, like, they make everybody watch that weird video, I'd be like, okay, not hungry. I'm going to take off.
Yeah.
And I know it's, like, after, like, the truth or dare portion or whatever.
But one Claire of the did that.
Yeah, one of the chicks does end up leaving. If I was her, I would have absolutely let Will walk me to my car.
Yeah.
And watch me drive away. Yeah. Like, I am not beneath that. Please. Like,
why does she stop? Like, she dies, right? I mean, we're to assume that he kills her.
There's no way that Pruitt doesn't. Like, if
it was so quick, though.
If someone just told me that they killed their wife, and then they were like, oh, hey, Carly, wait a second, I'd be like, nope. Nope. See ya. I'm out.
Yeah, I don't want you to walk me to my car.
No.
Guy that killed his wife.
Yeah.
You can stay here.
You're stranger danger. Yeah. I'm out. I'm locking my doors, and I'm driving away really fast.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That was really weird. The whole thing. It's really uncomfortable. It's so psychologically damaging to watch this part of the movie. You're just like, ah!
Like, even the whole thing, because
so uncomfortable.
Especially when he gets the message from Choi, and he, like, you're like, oh my god, they killed him. Like, you're on board, and you have figured it out, and you're like, that's great. And then he shows up, and then you're like, oh my god, what have I been doing for the past hour of my life?
Exactly.
Like, what is happening?
Exactly.
It blows your mind. It, like,
and
this
he's just
movie
like,
never
I'm
stopped.
So sorry. Mm-hmm. Like, and then y'all are trying to kill people. Starts smashing glasses.
Yeah. And then poor chick who just had a little sip of the wine.
No, she was down for the count.
Yeah. And then Sadie goes crazy.
Oh my gosh.
And like starts attacking people.
Just like screaming and running at people. No, thank you.
At that point, I mean, up until that point, everybody has kind of just kind of gone with the flow and kind of thought that Will was losing it and didn't really accept, even though there were so many warning signs, basically.
So many. It was the whole movie's a warning sign.
Yeah. Like, what in the heck was everybody else thinking? I don't know if maybe they were just, like, better friends with, what's her name, Eden, then everybody, like, then Will and Kira, his girlfriend, had been, maybe, like, they were like, oh, this is fine. It's just a weird dinner party with their weird cult friends. I'm totally going to hang out.
It
there
is.
There are a few people. There are a few
people. It's the Hollywood Hills. Like, yeah. I once went to a party in the Hollywood Hills. It wasn't like that, but I can imagine how it might be like that at some point.
There are a few people that I would wait through that. Four.
Well, and think about it, like, they've obviously been through some shit, like, and these friends, a lot of them, you can see, like, they didn't make good on being good friends after this. They fell off the ship, and they maybe have some guilt, and they're willing to, like, see it through and try and be supportive, and it gets to a point where they are blind to how creepy it actually is. And,
we'll meet you later for coffee and we can talk about it, but I am not going to be hanging out at your creepy house. Well, not your creepy house. It's a fine house.
Well, they got a very nice invitation.
They lock the door.
Yeah. No, that's no, no.
And when random people start like ringing their doorbell and showing up.
Yeah. Yeah. That was really weird.
So many warning signs.
There was definitely one point when the door rang and like, no one even came in. Like, he just went outside and then came back in and was no one there.
Yeah.
It's nuts. It's really scary.
Like, there's so many parts where you're just like, no, this is so terrifying. But then, like, that Choi thing totally ruins it because Will just freaks out on everybody and then he ends up showing up. And then you're like, maybe I'm just as crazy as this guy is.
So true. It's so true. So creepy. But I also, you know what I also like in the writing is how they are able to convey so much about the characters with very little dialogue. I don't know how they did that, but it's like you can just tell. Like, you know that one dude is a doctor, and you know that Kira, Will's girlfriend, is like a doctor or something, because they're like, they go into like crisis medical mode when someone goes down. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, just like little things like that. I loved how they just kind of like threw those in, and you just kind of felt like those characters were suddenly a little bit more well-rounded.
Definitely. And you can kind of see that everybody isn't really in the best part of their life. Like they are, right. Like nobody's really happy, I guess. I mean, you have the one chick who wants to do cocaine and make out with people. Then you have like the one guy who like wants to cheat on his wife, like isn't happy in like his relationship, and so like everybody's in a weird space.
Yeah. No one's got the sunshine happy thing going on, and the only people pretending to have that are Eden and David, who are super creepy and fake happy, and I can't handle it, saying that grief is a choice and things like that that are so creepy.
But it's, like, so well played because Eden is so believable as just, like, a broken person who is grasping at whatever she can to, like, get her through the day.
Yeah. And this house, reminds me so much of the Tate's house. Like, it's definitely not an accident that this looks just like the Tate's house, right? Like,
Yeah.
it's so similar to, like, you can see like a Manson family murder happening. Like,
Oh, absolutely.
it's so creepy and eerie how they, I mean, I'm sure a lot of houses in Hollywood Hills look like that, but still, it's so creepy. And the pool, even like the pool placement in the backyard, it's very familiar looking.
Everything about it was very, I mean, and it you kind of have that vibe throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
And then the end happens and you like see those lanterns start going up and you're just like,
That last scene with those lanterns, I get chills. It's so scary. You're
me
like,
too.
oh, that's happening everywhere.
Yeah, and you hear the
Shit.
helicopters and like
Yeah.
the sirens. And that for me, I live in LA and every night there's always just like an unnecessary amount of helicopters.
Yeah.
Something never, the city never sleeps, I guess crime wise. I don't know. But like
Yeah.
there's always like weird helicopters flying around. So that is just like such a, oh man, that's how it would go down. If
Yeah.
something
Well, where
like,
I live too, it's like that. So
yeah.
I can relate to that feeling
It's
where it's
so
just like,
crazy.
why is there a helicopter and why are they yelling stuff? I don't know what they're saying. Lock
Yeah, exactly. Stay in.
the
Don't leave your house.
It's like a California thing. I don't ever remember having that. Or maybe it's just because I live in a shitty
No, definitely. It's not a thing that happens anywhere else, I feel like. Even when I lived in the
Like,
Bronx, there were no like weird
yeah.
helicopters
No, it's
flying
such a
around at night.
California thing, I think. And nowhere else I've lived. Oh, yeah. Anyway, I don't like the helicopters. They're not fun. Yeah, that video is fucking creepy. I would have been gone, I think, before the video. If I was Will and I saw that naked chick, I'd be like, I'm out. Peace.
Yeah.
See you later. Done.
I would have been like, this is too much for me. It takes a lot for me to even like go to any kind of like huge social gathering. So like a part where
Right.
like, there's strangers and people aren't wearing pants, I'd be like, on my thing. I gotta go.
Maybe this isn't for me.
Yeah.
It's cool if you like it, just not for me. I'm gonna head out. Yeah, I
I'm
don't
not that
know.
socially advanced yet.
Yeah, but there were like bars on the windows and everything. Like,
The second they lock the door from the inside to the point where I can't walk over there and unlock it,
yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah, why would you even have a lock on your door that way? Like,
Because they're going to murder everyone. It was
yeah.
probably special put on there for that night.
There's only one reason to have a lock like that. That's
Oh,
to keep
man.
people in, not to not let people out. Maybe it's harder to pick that way, but still, fuck, that's creepier.
It's a murder
Oh,
house.
that really is a
That's the
murder
only
house.
reason.
Oh my God. So creepy. But the weird thing is their whole plan was to poison them. Were they gonna
They
put
weren't prepared to murder people. Like they
No.
weren't prepared to actually wield the gun or wield the knife. And you can
Right.
see it on David's face when he shoots. Is he the one that shoots Choi? Because I know Pruitt takes the gun and follows Choi into the like wherever he crawls to like shoot
Choi.
him again.
Choi is shot by Pruitt. Yeah.
Okay. But whenever David takes the gun and shoots his first like makes his first shot, you can see in his face that he's like, this was not the plan.
Yeah.
This for them to actually murder people was not the plan. They planned on everybody drinking the poison and everybody dying.
Yeah.
And so everything goes to shit when Will freaks out.
Well, why
I
would you need
want
to lock people in if you're just going to poison them? They don't know any different.
Failsafe,
I guess.
probably. What were the were Eden and David and Pruitt and Sadie supposed to drink the poison wine also?
I think so.
It was supposed to be kind of like one of the
Cool.
like end of days
Yep. I
kind of
think
thing.
so. Yeah.
But
They
then who
poured
lights the
everyone a glass.
lantern?
The lantern is like, okay, we're doing this shit.
It's a go.
You thought that they were gonna stay alive? No, because he even said, like, David even said when he found out that Eden shot herself, he was like, oh, good, she's beginning her transition.
Okay.
Like, I think they were all planning on transitioning, whatever that means. Sounds like
Yeah.
dying to me, but sure. And why does fucking Eden shoot herself in the stomach? No! That's the worst.
Worst place ever. Painful. Takes forever.
I would never do that.
No.
I mean, if you're going to kill yourself with a gun, everyone knows you got to get your head or your heart. But head is easier.
So yeah.
Just head. Yeah. Fuck. Stomach. Ugh. Just right in the stomach, too. Like, right against it.
No, thank you. No, thank you.
I felt so bad for her. Like, the whole movie. I'm like, she's just so tortured.
And she's just losing it.
Yeah. And at the end, when she's just like, this is not right. This is obviously wrong. She shoots Will and, like, immediately, like, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
She's definitely, she's super believable. I believe that character.
Yeah, I do too. And she's just like, take me outside. I'm like, take yourself outside, bitch. They were so nice to her.
I know.
This is all your fault. Just kidding. She's just as much a victim, right? I mean, I liked how they did that because you feel like she's a victim just as much as everyone else.
And like, nobody really held a grudge even though she was the reason why they were all there.
Yeah, true.
Sure. The surviving people, anyway.
Yeah. I liked how they had, like, three survivors. Like,
me too.
It seemed more realistic.
Yeah. No, I mean, and it definitely felt more real with them just kind of, like, finding, you know, whoever they came across, they would just, like, shoot or whatever. Like, you know, there wasn't, like, really, like, a real, like, cat and mouse game or anything. Like, it felt genuine that, like, this was not the way it was supposed to go.
Right.
So we're just going to have to do what we can.
Yeah, there was no, like, horror movie, like, rawr, at the end. Or, like, it wasn't at all stereotypical. It was fresh and different type of ending. And just, again, when they look over and those lanterns are all lit, you're like, oh. Oh, it's a great
ending. You know exactly what happened or what's going on, and you can imagine, you know, you've seen the strange people coming up to the thing. I would love for them to do like a sequel or a second of these movies from like one of the other house perspectives. Like,
oh, that'd be cool.
I would love that.
Yeah.
I loved this movie so much.
Oh my God. I do too. I love this movie. I love both of these movies equally.
Me too.
I love them. They're fantastic. And I don't really have much else to say about it.
Me either. It's great. Phenomenal.
It's fantastic. Although, the guy who played Will, I forget his name, he said that there is an Easter egg in the scene where he's in his son's room. And I watched it, and I have no idea what he's talking about. So if anyone can find the Easter egg when Will is in his son's room towards the end of the movie, let us know.
He didn't say what it was.
He wouldn't say what it was, and he, I can't find it online anywhere. So I'm going to
maybe there's an alien in there because he was in Prometheus.
Oh, maybe. Maybe there is. He said there's an Easter egg there because I put it there. So yeah, maybe like it's like one of the toys or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be funny.
That's what Prometheus came out like in 2012 or something, right?
Yeah, was it that long? Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was around 2012. Yeah. Very cool. All right.
That's what my guess is.
Well, you watch it. Maybe we can figure it out by the next episode. All right, so let's just talk about what's going on. Do you, Carly, you got a job.
I do. I have a job, and I'm so excited.
Congratulations on your new job.
Thank you. I'm very excited about it.
Very, very cool. And I caught up on the Exorcist TV show. Woo-hoo!
I didn't watch yesterday's.
I did.
Dang it. What do you think about it, though?
I like it. I don't love it. I like it. I think it's really hard to do horror TV shows. I don't typically like them.
I don't love it either, but I like it, and it's something that I watch every week just to kind of see what they do, because I'm intrigued by it almost.
I just don't like the way the priests are portrayed. Like, it's very strange to me. It's, like, very they're hypersexualized, and they're, like, kind of, like, police officer / heroes, and it's very weird. It's like a buddy cop drama. Inside a horror movie. It's really weird.
Good cop, bad cop, priest-wise. Because there's, like, the young attractive, tortured priest who just wants to, like, who's in love with this lady that he can't have because he's a priest.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, the bad guy who's been, like, excommunicated from the church, but he's, like, really good at his exorcism job.
Yeah, he's, like, a priest, and he's old, but he's also got kind of a hipster haircut.
Yeah, totally. And he's British.
Like,
British,
yeah, right? Yeah. He's kind of sexy, but you're not sure why. Because he's a priest.
Because he's breaking all the rules.
It's really weird. I don't... I mean, it's... I can get over it and just still enjoy it. But every time, like, something's happened, I'm like, but these are supposed to be priests, right? Like, it's so crazy.
Could you imagine them, though, like, having been, cast old men in those roles? Like, I feel like that would be amazing.
It would have been accurate.
They're not... All priests aren't old, though. I totally get the, like... The young, trying to be hip in an urban area priest. Like, I absolutely understand. Like, I get that. And I've seen that before.
You see it, but you don't see it that often. And I grew up Catholic. I've seen many priests and many nuns and in my life. I'm Italian Catholic from New York. It's not my first go round.
They can't all be old men.
I'm just saying, it's highly unlikely. And also, the way exorcisms are supposed to be viewed, like, they make it seem like, I don't know, I think other movies, exorcism movies, tend to do a little bit better job of showing how, like, exorcisms are really outdated and people don't do them anymore.
Yeah.
And there's a real cause for these things. Like, they make these guys seem like such monsters, which I understand is part of the plot, but it's just like, well, it's just take her to a psychologist. It's like, what? I wish there was a little bit more of that element where it's like, come on, it's 2016. We don't do exorcisms anymore. You know, they didn't do that. So it's just, I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird take. And I understand that they have to do it because it's a TV show and it has to last a really long time. And so
that honestly never crossed my mind. I don't know, like, I am not Catholic, so I have no idea. Like, I don't know what the I can't think of the word that I'm thinking of, but I don't know what the, I guess, I'm, like, totally blanking on what I'm
Bishop?
Trying to say.
Pope?
No, Priest? But, like, what the protocol, I guess, for exorcisms are. I don't know if, like, sure, maybe that's a thing.
It's not, it's an old school thing. It's like a super old school thing that nobody does anymore. And if they do it, it's like, if it is a thing, it has to go through so many steps and so much of a hierarchy before it can happen. That part of it's true. I just think it's weird how on the show, when they did it, it was like, I don't know, like they barely even touched upon it.
I don't think that they barely, the way that I looked at it, I guess, was like the older priest had obviously done exorcisms before. And so he was kind of the one that took the reins and like went for it, I guess. But I'm also like, I understand where you're coming from in like the real world aspect of it. But that also like isn't necessarily the real world because we're talking about Reagan. Like this is her kid. Going through something, whatever. I'm over it. So, like, you know, obviously exorcisms have been a thing that she's gone through before and something that's been realistic in her world. So, like, I'm just kind of trying to look at it as, like, not being taking place in, like, the real world, but taking place in the exorcist world, I guess.
Yeah. It's just, it's a little bit.
I try not to overthink it because it's the Exorcist TV show.
It's Exorcist, the new sexy version. Like
2016.
This ain't Joe Mama's Exorcist. This is the newer, sexier Exorcist with sexy priests and sexy exorcist children.
Yeah.
Demon children, not exorcist children. That doesn't make sense. She's like... even beautiful when she's disgusting.
Depends on how disgusting.
Yeah, that's true. There's a couple times when
she gets kind of gross.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know. It's entertaining to watch and I'm still watching it. So that's that. But it's, I mean, I still laugh at it because there's definitely parts where I'm like,
oh,
this
God,
is
absolutely.
ridiculous. This is insane and not at all a thing. So I don't think it should win any awards if that's what anyone's thinking.
Oh, not at all.
I just think it's really hard to do a horror TV show and do it well. It's got to end at some point. Like, how long can you drag it on? I like the anthology idea for shows. That's why I like Black Mirror so much. Because I think that works. Yeah.
Well, I mean, take the Patreon Twilight Zone. It's like one of like the most successful kind of like horror-esque, sci-fi-esque.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, like, even American Horror Story is trying to do something interesting in that it's, you know, a different story every season. But
even I don't think it would be successful otherwise.
Even that's not working because halfway through the season, you're like, okay, well, this is weird that this is still happening. Shouldn't something be resolved by now?
I almost wish that American Horror Story was just a straight to Netflix. Because in all of the shows, I can't watch American Horror Story live. Like, I can't. Mm. It doesn't keep me. I can't, you know, I don't remember to tune in because it's not something that's super intriguing. But like when I sit down and watch the whole thing or like binge watch it, I usually like it, except for the second season. I did not like the second season. But, like, I was actually really impressed by Hotel and how well it, like, the story was told and how well it wrapped up at the end, especially because I hated Hotel when I started watching it live.
Yeah, I can't believe you liked Hotel. Now I feel like I have to go back and watch it, but I really don't want to.
Yeah, I totally understand that.
Yeah.
I think the main reason I liked it, Evan Peters' character totally was like H.H. Holmes, and I grew up in Chicago, so like I was super excited with like the kind of the connection of that character. H.H. Holmes was like the first serial killer in Chicago, or I guess in America, and he built his house to kind of be like a murder house. So there were like walls that, you know, led to like hidden secrets. Rooms that like led to chambers that like you couldn't get out of, and like the movie Devil, or there's a movie coming out with Leonardo DiCaprio, Devil in the White City, based off of the book. That's it's like the book is half based on the making of like the World Fair that was in Chicago, and then the other half is about H.H. Holmes.
Oh,
so that connection and Evan Peters' character totally kind of got me through Hotel, even though he wasn't in the whole thing.
Interesting. Are you liking Roanoke still?
I haven't even watched it in weeks.
I heard that it's starting to fall off a little bit here.
I hear both. I hear that it lacks, and then I hear that it comes back, and then I hear that it's lacking again. So I really wish that they would just seriously sign a deal with Netflix and just release the seasons as like a whole thing instead of a weekly thing.
Yeah. Or, you know, cut down the amount of episodes. See, the good thing about Netflix is you don't have to do a full season. You don't even have to do half a season. You can do three. You could do what Gilmore Girls is doing and do four 1.5 hour episodes, you know, and that's it. You know, there's no rules. Like with Netflix, you can do whatever you want. I feel like maybe American Horror Story is doing this because there's just too little story to tell in too much time, so they add in these weird things that aren't necessary. So I wonder, I think Netflix might be like a better way for them to do that. If you have 4 episodes instead of 17.
I love that formula. Like, I really liked that when I first started watching like Sherlock. Like, their seasons are like 3 episodes, but the episodes are like an hour and a half long. I really like that. Because, you know, you stay interested and it's not too much and you know that there's an end in sight.
Right. Totally. So, I don't know. Just some thoughts on TV there, I guess.
Our two cents.
I'm just going to, I guess, talk about the movies we're doing next week. We're going to be doing Darling and I'm the Pretty Thing That Lives in This House. Both are available on Netflix. I think both are Netflix releases. I know I Am the Pretty Things is a Netflix release. I don't remember if Darling is.
I don't know if Darling is. Who knows?
No, you know, I don't think it is. but they're both very similar. I feel much strongly about one than the other, but Carly hasn't watched either of these yet, so we'll give our fresh take next week. I'm kind of anxious about it. These movies are very strange, and people have very strong emotions about them. So I can't
believe... They look really strange. Darling's been on my, like, to-watch list for, like, months, and I just haven't been in that mindset to say, okay, I'm doing this today.
I recommend drinking coffee. Just kidding.
Because you know me, I fall asleep during... Not boring movies. I don't want to say that, but
I don't want to say they're boring. They're just slow. They're slower movies. They're poetic. And they're very similar. I just think one is much, much better than the other. But I wonder how you feel about it. So we'll see.
I'm excited.
We'll hold it.
I like those episodes where we're like, we'll see how this goes.
Yeah, I'm really interested to hear your thoughts, and I'm really interested to rewatch them again and try to dig in a little deeper this time. But yeah, that's it for me. Is there anything you wanted to talk about, Carly?
No, I think we're good. I'm good.
Okay, kind of a weird mellow episode for you guys. I'm out of it. I'm having...
It's the tone of the day.
It's the tone of the year. I'm just ready for 2016 to be over.
Here.
For reals. Okay. Well, thank you to Troy from Cave Bastard for our song Sequencing the Drone. And thanks to Jason Link for our amazing logo. Please visit FinalGirlsHorrorCast.com for additional contact information for them. Also, we are on Twitter as FinalGirlsHC, and we are also on Instagram and Facebook if you'd like to follow us there, FinalGirlsHorrorCast. And yeah, we like talking to you guys, so feel free to give us a shout out if you're watching the episodes. I think some people's got to be downloading these.
if you don't, we enjoy talking about them anyway.
I don't know if anyone's downloading these, but no, I totally do. I know that there are some people, and thank you to those people who listen to us. We appreciate it a lot.
We appreciate it.
Listening to our random banter. semi-organized.
We try.
Talk of nothingness.
I have a corgi in my lap and she just almost slid off.
Oh. She roll off. Yeah. She's got little stubby legs.
Her little butt.
Oh, little loaf butt.
I got you.
Did you ever see those pictures where it's like corgi butt or a loaf of bread?
Yes. Oh my God.
And you really have to look at some of them because you're like, oh. I don't know.
You're like, next door, either way.
It could go either way. For sure. All right. We'll sign off now.
Yeah, thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
Yeah. Bye, guys.
Bye.